Capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody is radiated via Fukushima ocean currents and has a job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest, Aaron SCD. I'm not sure what your last name is, Aaron, but welcome to the program.
Aaron Hawkins, yeah. So, otherwise known as Storm Cloud Gathering.
Excuse me? Hawkins, first guy who died on Predator.
Yeah, I don't usually reference my life in the context of Predator, but I guess it's always the first time for everything.
Well, acting under the assumption that you're very familiar with Predators anyway.
Yes. Yes, a few of them.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about who you are, Aaron, what you do, and of course, this show's kind of like a bathtub, so it's best if there's a plug in there for your website or something.
Well, my website is waitingforthestorm.com, and you can get pretty much all my other connections from there. YouTube channel is Storm Clouds Gathering. And about myself, just a troublemaker, pretty much. Trying to get people thinking in a, to realize that they actually are the ones who can shift things, that it's not us up against an invincible master, that it really is basically a couple of puny guys in a corner convincing the rest of us that we're powerless. As soon as we realize that, then the whole game changes. But it's, you know, that's pretty much what I focus on, is the psychological aspect of it.
It's once you realize that you're actually facing a paper tiger rather than a real one.
Well, yeah, they have as much power as we give them. I mean, that's the reality of the matter. I mean, if the chain of obedience is still firmly in place, then they're extremely dangerous. And, you know, we shouldn't disregard that. We should be aware of the fact that there's quite a few willfully ignorant people who are supporting the system and basically holding it on its current trajectory. But we also shouldn't disregard the fact that it doesn't take the majority to shift the current. It doesn't take the majority to actually change trajectory. It's not a question of actually getting the majority. History is really never determined by majorities. It's determined by those who have the most moral will, you know, the most initiative. And it's, you know, if you were to put it up on a scale, the actual drive behind a globalist apologetic, someone who's saying, yes, we need a globalism, yes, we need all these, you know, these new anti-terrorist measures, this surveillance state. And there are people like that. You know, I have a brother-in-law, or ex-brother-in-law, actually, who would defend these things, but he could only do so through basically just, you know, half-assed justifications. There was never a way that you could come out passionately and just building a movement behind that kind of thing. It all has to be done in deception and without the public really having any understanding of what's going on. Whereas the opposition, when a person really wakes up, when a person realizes what's actually going on, they're much more driven. You know, a person who wants to stop this thing, who realizes where we're headed, they have the upper hand. I mean, a group of people, a small minority of people who are passionately driven can do far more than 10, 15, 20 times their number who are just doing it out of a weak intellectual justification. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It makes total sense. I'm looking at an email, and I don't want to kind of change the topic too much here, but I got an email from a listener the other day who listened to my show with Stan Deo, and we were talking about Ahmadinejad, you know, from Iran. And he used the term that Ahmadinejad said that Iran will wipe Israel off the face of the earth kind of thing. And it turns out that he never said that or anything close to it. And it was interpreted by the mainstream media, parroted, repeated, and then forced out onto the airwaves in a propagandistic fashion by AIPAC, right? And I got this email from a dude saying that I was anti-Semitic because I had proof that Ahmadinejad didn't say what the Israel lobby said he said, right? I'm anti-Semitic because I actually go through the facts, right? Did some long emails with this guy, and of course, it was a complete waste of my time. Because even after explaining all the situations and about what anti-Semitism actually is, about Ashkenazis and all the other different tribes of Israel and what Zionism is and blah, 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 blah. You know, I even had to explain to him what white phosphorus was. He didn't even know that. He thought it was a Holocaust reference and that I was being anti-Semitic by using the term white phosphorus.
Well, that's the thing that when you get into studying the nature of the crowd, more and more you have to acknowledge that the crowd is not a logical beast at all. It's an emotional beast. And it actually operates with its political ideas very much like a religion. It's, you know, it doesn't have to have any factual basis. In fact, factual basis doesn't actually help the propagation of an idea. What's important is that a strong image is evoked and then it's repeated. And that's what the powers that be understand. They understand that it's not a logical game. And this is largely due to the fact that we have a populace who doesn't get educated. Why is that? Well, because the state controls education and they don't want people to know how to think. So, you know, that's the current state of affairs.
They've replaced that education system with an indoctrination system. So that way, the vast majority of people who go through this, like, there'll be good individuals, right? People who are real bright, who think for themselves and what have you. They'll be the troublemakers in the school. They'll be the ones that are going to detention all the time. They'll be the ones who get told you're a loser and you'll never amount to anything. Those kind of people. So school, and I know from personal experience, because I think I got suspended 17 times in my high school career from one school. and I didn't actually really do anything that bad all the time. I just wouldn't shut up about stuff, basically.
Yeah, and it's not an accident. I mean, if you look at the way that the system is designed, I mean, you would have to be a total moron to think that to do the same thing over and over again and just inject more and more money into worse and worse programs, that you're going to get a better result. They fully understand what the results are going to be. What they are calculating is that those of us who are still awake will not understand the way the crowd operates as it is right now. I mean, that's, we have the certain raw material in front of us, which is the crowd, which is the people as they are. We can't reverse their lack of education in a few years, unfortunately. I mean, I wish I could, but we have to come to terms with where we are. And where we are right now is a crowd that operates with emotion and images and symbols. They don't really care about the logic. They've been so basically saturated with religious thinking. I mean, essentially, you can take a person's political beliefs and a person's religious beliefs, and for instance, in the United States, the passion and the way that they approach those things is virtually identical. You know, you can show a person 100% irrevocable fact, you know, showing that there was nanothermite in 9/11, that there was molten steel in the basement, and they will still do everything in their power to come up with an explanation as to how those buildings fell. I've had even my father, who you know, had a a very technical degree and knows better. You know, he was a pilot. I actually got him. I presented him. I spent 4 hours presenting him with all the information. It was enough to make him cry. But as soon as the next day came, as soon as he had a chance to reformulate, he had come up with some ridiculous explanation. And that's just what we're dealing with. So, unfortunately, we can't logically sway people towards the right direction, but we can build up an emotional movement towards the right direction, because that's what the crowd responds to. They respond to emotion. Mm. And that, fortunately, we have all the material to do that. The system that we're facing runs counter to the current, the underlying hereditary structures that hold up, that have built up throughout generations in society. And what they're trying to do, the people who are pushing through these drastic changes that ridiculous speeds, they're trying to use bureaucracies and systems, you know, to basically herd the people into a direction. But historically, that doesn't work. If you go counter to the underlying inherited belief systems of a culture, inevitably that ends in disaster. And regardless of whether there's a large percentage of brainwashed Americans, brainwashed New Zealanders, or wherever you are, the reality is people aren't ready for where the powers that be want to take us. And if you study like the French Revolution and see what happened when rapid changes were attempted in a very, very short period of time, all the people who attempted that ended up dead. You know, that's where this ends. And that's the thing that I think people need to understand, is that this is not going to end well for the powers that be. You don't need to be afraid about the future of the people. In the end, I think it's pretty clear that we have the truth on our side. And we have the passion. It only comes when you know you got the truth on your side. Whereas the people who are trying to do this, all they have is deception. And that doesn't have very long legs. You know, lies have short legs.
Yeah, and I think the problem with the truth is, in general, and I count myself in this, is that we get really angry because we've got the truth on our side, and what other people are saying is basically lies, and we know what the truth is. It makes us very, very angry that we're being lied to, because now we know. And when you try to convince these people, and I like what you talked about how people were kind of religious in their thinking, this individual who I referred to earlier technically was religious and quoted me Bible passages and what have you, and that World War III is inevitable and we should just let it happen, and that it's perfectly okay to rain white phosphorus down on children and burn their faces off. You know, that stuff's all fine. But of course, trying to convince them with logic to talk the other way just wasn't working. You know, it's because people in the system, or people who have a religious dogma, and I'm not talking about all people who are religious. By and large, most religious people that I've met are perfectly logical, perfectly reasonable, and vast majority of the time, very nice, very generous, very kind. There are a few, on the other hand, that give the rest a bad name because they're fanatical, they're psychotic, they justify murder, rape, pillage, lying, and they cannot, under any circumstances, admit when they're wrong. Because I've got this one book that was written thousands of years ago that obviously has everything in it, okay? How to play Tomb Raider on PlayStation is in the Bible, I'm telling you, okay? It rules my life. The answers to everything are in there. The Xbox cheat codes for Grand Theft Auto 4 are in the Bible. It can guide you through everything, okay? It's even got a heads-up display on it. It doesn't make any sense. It's because when people get taught critical thinking in university or in any format, essentially what they're doing is they're not teaching them critical thinking. They're teaching them to be critical of people who think. because people like the Skeptical Society and things like that, they're very skeptical, but they're only skeptical of anything that isn't the official version of events. They don't equally apply their skepticism to both sides of the argument. They only apply it to one. And they're essentially just a bunch of sycophantic servants to the system. And when you try to argue with these people, you are not in any way strengthening your argument, benefiting yourself. You are only accomplishing one thing, wasting your own mother effing time. That's about it. Stop doing it.
The thing that's important to clarify here is that any belief system can have a religious slant, or the religious sentiment can exist within almost any belief system. I mean, I've met fanatically religious atheists who will disregard massive chunks of reality just to enforce their belief system. Or to defend their belief system. Any belief that gets established in a crowd and starts propagating from person to person without critical examination essentially takes on the same forms. If you look at people who supported Obama, they have the same tendencies. It doesn't really matter what you believe. In the end, what it comes down to is it's the way that you approach the reality, whether reality is more important to you than your beliefs, or beliefs are more important to you than reality.
Yeah, indeed. And we'll talk about more of this after the break. My very special guest, Aaron Hawkins from waitingforthestorm.com. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. You can call in 218-339-8525 or join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Is Vinny with a Y? Because it's the most important question. Back in a sec.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. It's gonna rain, rain, rain. Yeah.
something. What was it that I was talking about before, about how people get ostracized because they become too fanatical and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, I think the underlying thing is that in the end, what it comes down to isn't necessarily the being ostracized, but it's the fact that when a group of people, any group of people, believe that they have the truth on their side, and they believe that they have basically they have reality, regardless of how true that reality actually is, it slowly over time, as it passes from person to person and it builds strength, it becomes like it gains in numbers and gains in momentum. It transforms itself into a religious belief, even totally non, you know, mystical beliefs, like, you know, the French Revolution, which were really had nothing to do with whether there was a God or not. Predominantly, the belief systems were having to do with equality and you know, certain illusions about how they could rebuild society, how they could restructure everything. The belief gained such momentum that when they came up against these really old resistances, the people who still believed in a monarchical system, they would not tolerate it, and that's what led to essentially genocide. Most people don't think of the French Revolution as genocide, but if you actually study the history of what actually happened, it was horrific. I mean, there were people who were just absolutely wiping out towns, men, women, children, babies, to crush any opposition to these new revolutionary beliefs. And that's a danger that we should be aware of, even on with people we agree with. You know, the truthers may be in the minority right now. We may have, you know, less clout right now, but there is the very real possibility at some point in history that our movement could actually end up getting the upper hand, regardless of the numbers. And that's one thing I keep reasserting over and over again, is that we don't have to actually get the majority. We are perfectly capable right now of building a movement that could totally overturn the current system. It doesn't take a very large majority at all. Like the Jacobins who took control of France were a tiny, tiny, tiny minority, but they had passion on their side. Their belief system had become so entrenched and so religious that it gave them the strength to win. So that religiosity, it's a fault.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Well, let's try and do a definition here. What is the definition of religious, in the context that you're using at the moment?
It's when a belief becomes untouchable by logic or fact. It is
dogmatic.
It's become something that it's become emblematic. It becomes like you say something like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal. You know, there is underneath even the principles of the Constitution a sense of assertion of a belief that, you know, that you cannot validate in reality. There might be real reasons for a belief, for instance, but in the end, what it comes down to is that when a person comes to believe something, and it transforms into a religious sentiment, it doesn't matter what anything in reality may say to them. Like, it doesn't matter whether someone shows them absolute incontrovertible fact that shows that the United States government is absolutely corrupt and is actually working to their detriment. If they're in their mind, the United States has become Mr. Good Guy, and the symbols the propaganda and the illusions that they were raised with are still in force, then nothing that they are shown. You could show them direct images of kids getting white phosphorus, and it would not make an alteration in their belief system.
That's what I find is very frightening about it, is because on the one hand, and let's go through the natural progression here, because you've got somebody who believes in something with a religiosity fashion, okay, as you've just defined for us. Now, for those of you who are religious, who are listening to the streams and everything, there's absolutely no offense intended here. We love you. You're very cool and such and such.
Reasserting, though, of course, the important thing to reassert here is it has nothing to do with your mystical beliefs at all.
That's
you can be non. You can be non-religious in the religious sentiment fashion and still believe in God.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Like me, for instance, I don't belong to any religion, but I believe in some kind of a higher entity out there. And quite frankly, I think it's looking out for me all the time because I have just amazing strokes of luck practically on a daily basis. And it makes me feel blessed. And so therefore, I believe that I am. But if somebody can convince me that I'm actually cursed, and show me some incontrovertible evidence, I'll start going with that belief. You know, that's me. I'm not religious in my thinking at all. Although I do follow quite a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, I've found, after studying many religions, that, by God, there's a heck of a lot about them that I agree with. You know, in the vast majority of cases, almost everything about most major religions that I've studied makes a whole lot of sense to me. But this is the thing. It happens to a very small minority, I think. They turn those beliefs, which are good, well-rounded, lead to a happier life with less corruption, less promiscuity, more moral control over yourself and your own body, less alcohol addiction, etc. These are the things that I actually that are associated with devout religious practice. Okay, those things that the New World Order wants us to all engage in. In the Brave New World sense of the word, are basically stopped by religious practices in a lot of cases, particularly if they're devout Muslims or devout Christians. Many of the New World Order promiscuity and stupidity and what have you kind of pings off them like water off a duck's back. It doesn't affect them. So that's where religion comes in very, very strong, and that's why I'm in favor of it in general. There's this small minority, and as you talked about, it's always the minority that hold the keys to power because they're the ones with the determination. Now, what happens, I find, and I'm sure even people who are also Christian or Muslim or whatever will also find this, is that you have people who are quite fanatical, okay? As we've talked about, that religious mindset. You don't have to be part of a religion in order to have that religious mindset. And I think this is quite an important realization that you've kind of given me here, Aaron, because I fear, frankly, that people will get into it so much and convince themselves that it's 100% correct, will not listen to anybody else, and as a direct result, they lose all their friends. Now, as a direct result of losing all their friends, they find themselves alone most of the time. And as a direct result of being alone most of the time, they don't have any other social contact to help them through their daily life. They don't have anybody to help rationalize things for them or help them to chill out or anything like that. Any of those positive things that friendships and socializing and relationships, humans being social creatures, that we need. Now,
I think your context might be from your country, though, because say a place like United States, the exact opposite is the case. You know, for Christians in the United States, where they actually have a very strong majority in the population, have far more community than non-Christians. So, you know, definitely in an atheist society or a predominantly atheist society, like I've lived a lot of time in France, that is definitely the case. You know, if you're an evangelical Christian in France, you are isolated. The majority of the population is operating from a completely different religion. They have a different religiosity.
My point is that it starts to make you go a little nuts either way, okay? Because it's either A1, you're nuts by yourself because you don't have any social contact, or B, you're nuts with a whole bunch of other nuts people, which makes it even worse.
Well, I guess the question is really whether we can actually change that. Because, I mean, the first thing you've heard that proverb, you know, give us the strength to change the things we can change, and the patience to accept the things we can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. We're not going to be able to change the religiosity of the crowd in our lifetime. And if we just, we could waste a lot of energy bitching about it.
Oh, you're telling me. You're telling me. I replied to this guy that I was telling you about who sent me that email. I wrote this long-ass email. It took a lot of time out of my morning, and I did it even before breakfast. And he only replied with one sentence, "I'm not going to listen to you anymore because you're racist." Well, it took me a hell of a lot more effort to explain things logically than they do to dismiss them illogically. So basically, I'm wasting my energy, and I'm not going to do it again.
Well, that's why you shouldn't be operating with the presumption that an illogical beast can be convinced with logic. If it's an emotional beast, and if the underlying structure is held together by emotion, then the attack should be emotional. That's a huge thing to realize, especially if you're a logical person yourself, that in order to be effective, you have to operate counter to your own instincts if you're going to make an impression upon those who aren't using logic. And the simple fact of the matter is, regardless of the specific belief system, has nothing to do with your belief of God or anything like that. The majority of the population is operating under religiosity in one form or the other. I've found religiosity in the deepest depths of atheism. I found, religious vegetarians. I mean, I've been a religious vegetarian. I've been a religious vegan. You can be religious about just about anything, and in fact, most humans are. Regardless of whether they can see it. I mean, that's the reality, is that most people are operating and controlled by subconscious tendencies that they aren't even aware of. And our current situation is, we have a society that needs to be shifted, so we have to be looking at what would be effective.
Indeed, indeed. Society has needed to get its shift together for quite some time. Aaron Hawkins is my very special guest, and we'll be right back just after the break. You can check out more of his work at waitingforthestorm.com, and you can check me out at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Back in a minute.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, "Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I've been everywhere.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto,
where you come
Winslow,
to listen
Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma,
to the Tampa, places Tampa, where Tampa, military Tampa, recruiters Tampa, call home. It's AmericanFreedomRadio.com, trying to brainwash you all to join the military. Get in there, boy. Go shoot some of those sand people. I'm joking. It's a Star Wars reference.
They might not understand the context because they weren't there for the break.
Okay, let's talk about the context there, because I think there was an important discussion that we had over the break, Aaron, is I had a kind of realization, and for anybody who's a truther out there who goes out, with a 9/11 as an inside job sign, or tried to convince the average person on the street or whatever, I want to use the word sheeple, but I also don't want to use it because it's disrespectful kind of thing. When you're trying to convince people of something, essentially, it's not entirely dissimilar from sales. Now, I was in sales for a number of years, and I was very good. In fact, I can say 100% provably that I was the best in that company. However, I couldn't do it forever. And when it came time to hang up my guns and what have you, and just be like, my sales career is over, I cannot do it anymore. Reason why is because when you're trying to convince somebody of an idea, and your income or your survival or anything is dependent on the reactions of those other people, when they reject you, it is an incredibly spirit-crushing experience. It makes you angry. It makes you upset. It makes you not want to make another telesales call. Okay, and that's what happened to me. And now it is happening to truthers, because the response that they're looking for from the general public is, oh my God, 9/11 was an inside job. The government are a bunch of tyrannical scumbags. Okay, now that's what you're trying to get as your response, because you're talking about your survival, you know, much the same reason that people will go out there and earn an income off of selling stuff to people that perhaps they do need or don't need. It's irrelevant, because the result is exactly the same. You need that money, or you need that capitulation of the people to understand what you're talking about. If they reject you, it makes it much, much harder to go on to the next person. But that's what you're supposed to do in sales. Do not waste your time on the person who will not be convinced, who you will not be able to sell to, okay? As soon as you click that's one of those people, go, okay, thank you very much for your time. Boom, hang up the phone, go to the next person. That's how you're really supposed to do sales, because it minimizes your contact with the negativity that would convince you that doing your job is a bad thing. Now,
well,
go ahead.
This is opening up a can of worms, but I really think that kind of methodology is not taking into account the psychology of the masses. I mean, if you're treating it as if it's a sales pitch to convince the individual who you're facing, then you're going to, in the big picture, fail. People who are operating in a group think mentality, which the vast majority of people are, whether they acknowledge it or not. And, you know, you can say the exact same thing about truthers. We're not exempt. There's only a very small minority of any group that is actually truly individual and is independent intellectually. The vast majority of people operate as part of the pack. Now, when you're dealing with that psychology, you have to build the momentum or the appearance of momentum of the pack, and that doesn't, you know, it doesn't work to present something to a person and wait for their response. It has to be done in a context of just affirmation, and a person, you don't even listen to the rejection. That's the thing. It has to be done in a context of, like, this is what is true, and walk away. You cannot be trying to negotiate, because negotiation is in the mind of a crowd, in the mind of groupthink individual, is a sign of weakness.
Well, this is why when you're doing sales, the easiest way to be successful in it is if you're only talking to one person. If you're talking to more than one person, those people talk to each other, so you don't control the conversation. You can't direct it where you want it to go, because you're not the biggest person in that conversation. You're one of three. Okay?
Unless you've got a podium. You know, see, that's the thing. Look at the most effective sales method that they use right now. It's television. You know, and nowadays, video.
No, that's not true. That's not true at all. Television advertising is remarkably ineffective. And the most effective form of sales is having somebody that you know coming up to you and telling you that this stuff that I got here was really, really awesome. Word of mouth. That's the most effective sales tool. And as truthers, and I see this quite a lot happening, you can just say one thing to one person and walk away. And you'll find out later on down the track. Sometimes for people it happens very quickly. Sometimes it takes a lot longer. But other people will come up to them and say very similar things. Now, with the what's the called? Normalcy bias, I think it is. Once you hear the same thing from multiple sources, you begin to think it normalizes in your mind, essentially, and you begin to accept it. So now, when I was first called crazy by my brothers and sisters, they're now saying that maybe I should be in politics, that I'd help the country out, and they're asking me about chemtrails and about GMOs and the agenda by Monsanto to control the world's food supply and all of this sort of stuff. And I didn't have to convince them of any of that.
Well, the thing is, you have to keep in mind that you're not operating in isolation. There's thousands of people. And if you think that it's a question of individual sales and individuals transmitting a single idea, you have to ask yourself, how many times has a Coca-Cola salesman approached you? How many times has a McDonald's salesman approached you? They've been capable of infiltrating every market on the planet using this psychology of affirmation. And what's happening right now is you're talking about these kinds of belief systems are actually getting accepted by your friends and family. The thing is, there are thousands and thousands of us now who are affirming these things, who are creating contagion. And contagion is one of the foundational principles of moving a crowd. You know, it's like a current of water. You know, have you ever seen water is flowing in one direction and suddenly it breaks out and it kind of, you know, pushes out a little bit of the dirt and then suddenly a whole bunch of water starts flowing that direction. It's like the initial first steps might be done by leaders, you know, intellectuals who actually think about things. But once the current of a crowd gets going in one direction, they're no longer operating according to logic. That in the end, if we win, it's not going to be because we convince everybody, but it's going to be because a current of society starts to develop from those few people who are actually thinking, who have enough passion to push everybody in the right direction, to say, this is what's true. And that's why it's important for people to understand the psychology of crowds, to understand what is actually going to work. It's not going to be convincing everybody that there's nanothermite in the World Trade Center buildings. It's going to, and it's horrible because we don't want to believe this. But in the end, what's going to be the determining factor is if they feel like the majority of people, or the majority of people that they respect, are actually moving in that direction. And that's why the shifts in society are so slow. Because if you could just convince somebody that 1 + 1 = 2, they would be over in just a matter of a few months, because you just show everybody the facts and it would be done.
Mm-hmm. And I find that facts in themselves aren't enough to convince some people, right? I mean, facts are very powerful. If you're an honest person, I think there's a great quote, I think it might be by Mark Twain or one of those older writers, but he says, when an honest man discovers he is mistaken, he will either cease to be mistaken or he will cease to be honest.
Ha, and this that's is a good one.
And this is the test of people, isn't it? You can tell them facts that are incontrovertible and what have you. If they can accept them and go, okay, and then ask another question just to clarify or whatever, just to try and make a bit more sense of it, you can tell that's a very honest person who's willing to admit that they're wrong. I just pretty much operate under the assumption that everything I know to be true is actually wrong, and I'm simply waiting for the evidence to make my belief correct. And if I don't find that evidence that I'm wrong, then I'm right about being wrong. So you know, I can't lose with that mindset, essentially. You know, I'm never afraid to be told that I'm wrong. I love being proven wrong. Love it. Absolutely do. Every time I get an email from a listener who corrects me on a little fact here or there, or shows me a link or something like that, it just makes me, it swells me with happiness, because it's like, finally, I was proving myself wrong. I'm right.
You win no matter what.
Exactly. I mean, setting yourself up, and I'm not sure if this is a logical fallacy that I've created for myself, because I just hate because I hate having conversations where I kind of feel bad about myself for being an idiot this whole time. The assumption is I'm an idiot and I don't know what's going on, you know. And just be happy with that fact, and because quite frankly, the man who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing. The man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough. My very special guest is Aaron Hawkins. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We're now going to start taking your calls, ladies and gentlemen. So 218-339-8525 is the number to ring in. That's 218-339-8525. And you can join Freighter X and Tracy and a whole bunch of other people in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We'll be right back after the break.
did all right. Welcome back. And harmony. Welcome back, everybody out there listening in to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And by the way, always try to give American Freedom Radio big props. After all, they gave me my show. And it's more the fact that if you're listening to the American Freedom Radio before my show, you'll either have Kevin Barrett from Truth Jihad Radio or Christopher Green from Greenway Radio. And after the show, at the moment, I think we're playing American Freedom Radio replays of the Jack Blood Show, which happens in the mornings. I think he starts at like 10 a.m. or something along those lines. But Jack Blood, oh my God. Oh my God. Such an amazing radio show host. And on Fridays, there's Roxy as well. And it's just basically, you can tune into the AmericanFreedomRadio.com any old time you please. Bound to be somebody really quite fabulous on there, which is great, mostly because it's archived, so you don't even have to wait. You just go to show archives, there's this show and that show, and blah, 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 there's all these different shows. Just listen to them, man. Seriously. I'd encourage everybody to just listen to one show from each host from the network, because there really is something for everybody. And what we've got now is we've got people who like to garnish their other radio shows that they listen to with the Vinnie Eastwood Show or with Jack Blood or something like that. I've just got to really convince people to take the time, because there's a lot of great content on here, and I've listened to a lot of other networks in America. And compared to American Freedom Radio, and I'm not being biased here, this is just me being honest with the facts, the other radio networks basically aren't anywhere near as entertaining. Not even close. So we have Aaron Hawkins in here, waitingforthestorm.com. Now, what were we talking about over the break? We're talking about, your frost-free freezer. I thought that was sad. He's in a real hot room, ladies and gentlemen, so he's sweating. And so I said to him, you know what, why don't you go to your freezer, just grab off some of that frost and all that stuff in the back of your freezer, just rub it on your face. He's like, yeah, man, I'll go and do that. He comes back, frost-free freezer.
Son of a... Yep, that's when you don't want to have a good freezer, is when, yep, it's when you have no air conditioning.
Yeah, you're like Frosty the Hot Man.
Yep.
He's melting in there, ladies and gentlemen. Poor bastard. Okay, and we've only got you for another segment as well. So what I'll do is I'll leave you off with my final segment question. Being, we all self-censor a little bit. There's, for some reason or another, in conversations with people, some points just don't come up that we'd like to say. Sometimes we choose to hold our tongues because we think it might be a bit risque. But on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, there is no such worries. So if you have anything that you kind of do want to talk about, but you're afraid of being judged about it or whatever, or it might be a little bit but much for some people, this is the place to actually say it, where you really can feel comfortable about it. So go for your life if you have anything.
Wait, you're saying you want me to pull out skeletons and say things that they would piss people off, that kind of thing?
Why not?
Well, I mean, the thing that if you had watched my channel from the very beginning, there's a whole bunch of videos that are taken, or made private, essentially. Because I did go through that, I had a tendency I went into every topic that I wanted to and tested out the crowd. And what I discovered is that the religious mentality is permeates everything, even into the groups that we think are our allies. And for instance, one of the things that I would touch upon in some of my videos was, and some of the most controversial ones, is where I talked about gold and silver not being the end all. Because there's a lot of people who really have turned gold and silver into a religion, just as much as you could say the religion of Jesus. It has an identical psychology. You know, it doesn't matter if silver goes up, then that means you know, that's a sign that we're right. If silver goes down, well, it means that it's going to go back up. You know, it doesn't matter what reality says. People who are operating from the concept that gold and silver is the solution will always turn it around to the same thing, just like the same thing happens in a religious mindset. And what I've discovered is that regardless of what I could logically explain to a person about, you know, the history of gold and silver, the history of the bankers, the fact that the central bankers were operating for hundreds of years with gold and silver being the format of exchange, that means absolutely nothing, because it is a religious doctrine. It has become ingrained, and the reaction is an emotional reaction. And I've learned that it doesn't really do much good to go after that, because the only result is that you have all these people who may be effective allies towards the final goal, which is really more important than the nitpicking details, that would turn against you and become raging enemies. It's a very quick reaction. As soon as you trigger a person's resistance due to a religious sentiment, you become an enemy in their mind, and that's not really valuable. And so what I've discovered and what I've focused on since then is really how do you unify people and sidestep the stupid crap, the stupid obstacles that they have, these minds that they have in their own mind, where they're completely blind. You know, without getting the illusion that you're going to change that, because you're not. That's the reality. There is no logic or talking or effective salesmanship that is going to untangle a person's doctrines that are established religious beliefs. You know, and then once again, reasserting, has nothing to do with mysticism at all. It could be gold and silver. It could be Obama is, you know, the best. It could be that, you know, Ron Paul is the best. You know, as horrible as that sounds, Ron Paulism is very much a religion. And if you throw that in people's faces, they're not going to listen to you towards the more important thing. So how do we get people to step aside from all their religions and focus on something new? And I honestly think that what it requires is to form a new assertion that can actually superimpose itself over all of these beliefs, if that makes any sense. You know, to not hit
it, it does, but I have a question here. I mean, it's like you said there's something, you know, how do I get them to step aside and listen to me, sort of thing, or at least that's what I took from it. Whereas mine is, how do I get out of their way so I can let them go off the cliff while I'm going to head for safety? You know, I'm not worried necessarily about convincing them of the truth, because it seems like the juice is not worth the squeeze. Like, I'm going to forcing other people to do what you want, or trying to get people to do what you want. In some cases, you'll spend more of your own energy than it's worth.
Well, if you're thinking in terms of convincing somebody to do what you want, then we're talking about two different things. If you're talking about shifting the current of a culture so that it doesn't destroy itself, I mean, if we're headed towards what I believe is a massive war.
Well, if we're talking about that, then there's no question about it. It is absolutely worth trying to convince people, regardless of what you suffer through.
Yeah, but in the end, though, is it a question of convincing people, or is it a question of evoking that deep emotional response and using essentially the underlying moral fabric that people already have? And that's what I really believe. Is that what it comes down to? Is to simplify things to the point where there is no room for debate and no room for argument. You know, when you talk about, you know, you don't get into the details of trying to prove to someone where we're going. You go to their heart that this is wrong. This is wrong. What we're doing goes counter to the foundational natural rights of humanity, that, you know, the rights of life, the right to liberty, the right to property, all of these things, these core foundational principles are being taken from you. And you know, you can't, obviously, if you sit there and you try to quantify what is the right to life, and you say, well, how can you prove you have the right to life? And you get into an intellectual discussion and try to prove, you'll get absolutely nowhere. But if you assert it, you know, just even just referring to something as simple as the U.S. Constitution, you know, and you talk about, you know, the right to the freedom of speech, and you show, and you say, basically, they're taking that from you, then you can build the momentum to overturn the system, which is essentially taking us the direction we're going. I don't think we can, I don't think it's reasonable or even possible to rebuild a new system while the current system is in place. I mean, we are in a system that is so corrupt and so destructive that it will destroy any attempt to build something positive unless it itself is dismantled. I mean, the U.S. government as it currently stands will destroy any attempt to build a true republic or a true representative system that actually serves the needs of the people and actually respects the Constitution. So the U.S. government as it stands right now has to come down. And the only way that's going to happen is through building a momentum that makes people feel it, that it has to come down.
It's about kind of evoking a necessity. Okay, it's like that's the mother of invention, isn't it? It's necessity. Once you convince people that it is absolutely necessary to dismantle the U.S. government, and in fact, almost every single government. I may have difficulty finding a government that I don't think could be justifiably dismantled, because they're all corrupt and they violate everybody's rights all the time. Everybody's government does. It's what governments do. It's their modus fracking operandi. And trying to convince people of that after they've been brought up in the government system, which convinces people, we're the government, we love you, we raise you, we educate you, love us back, give us tax. Now, the fact of the matter is, you don't have a choice in any of those. Going to public education is not a gift. You are forced into it. If you don't send your children to school, you can be sent to jail in some places. Take Ruby Ridge, for example. That's an extreme example of what happens to you when you don't want your children to be brainwashed by the state. You get executed along with your entire family with gun-bearing scum.
There are people who, you know, resist. I mean, homeschooling is legal in the United States. It's legal in a lot of countries.
For now. You know, the first group of people that Hitler actually passed legislation prohibiting wasn't the Jews at all. It was actually homeschoolers. And the last people to have discriminatory legislation against them was gun owners. So the first and last port of call for governments when they want to take control of populations, first, get them while they're young. Secondly, make them defenseless when they're not, and then they're your slaves.
Yeah, but it's the biggest thing that they do is actually the part that's least visible to most people because they become so saturated with it. But it's, if you look at the way that Hitler operated, he built up a mythology, and that was why he was so effective. Is he didn't rely on logic. I mean, if he had relied on logic, then it would have been completely ineffective. I mean, if he had sat there and tried to convince the people of how, you know, how we can prove that Jews are inferior, then he would have failed. But he understood human psychology more than most good people understand or are willing to apply, which is that human psychology responds to affirmation, passionate affirmation. And that's, you know, we were talking about in the break, that there's basically two categories of activism. There's activism to other activists, where you're talking to them about the facts, and then there's activism to the crowd, where essentially the only thing that's effective is emotion. Because if you can build associations and emotional connections with people, that will win in the end. That's how the powers that be are winning in a lot of cases, is just affirmation, imagery, and emotion. And
you're completely correct. That's the sheer face of it, isn't it, with politics? In fact, the New Zealand National Party, which is the equivalent of the Republican Party, a book was released after some documents were leaked, and it's called The Hollow Men. And the complete and utter cynicism with which these party officials talk to each other in reference to their voters as idiots who will basically just follow whatever emotional ties we give to them completely proves your point.
Yeah, that's the powers that be are using that. And this is the thing. The majority of good men are both incapable. They're not taught. They're not taught the principles of human psychology. We're not taught these things in school for a reason. The only people who get these higher level understandings of the way the crowd actually works, not the way we want it to work, but the way that it actually works, are the people who are moving up through these less reputable channels. You know, they are getting trained by the people around them. You know, once they've established, you know, that they're on the right path with the agenda that those other people want, then yes, they're taught these techniques. The reality of the matter is that most people who want good things for humanity are unwilling to do what's effective. You know, they were so attached to what's emotionally satisfying to us as individuals, as activists. You know, I want to prove that I'm right. I want to prove that our points are more logical. In the end, what difference does it make if you're right? If no one is going to actually alter their course because of it. In the end, does it matter why you will alter their course? If we can alter the course of humanity away from war, that is the goal. That's what we need. So in the end, we have to be aware of where those psychological minds are and not run ourselves right into them.
I think, that's an idea, because psychology for people is can be seen as somewhat of a trap. Don't get caught up in it, basically, especially by your own mind. Thank you so much, Aaron, for coming on today. You can check out his website at waitingforthestorm.com, and we'll be back next segment. Thanks for coming on, Aaron. See you later, mate.
Bonkers.
Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I need, give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
I wake up every day
to listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose that sense of humor, baby, you're going to go friggin' nuts. Oh, yes, you will. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, are there some friggin' nuts people out there? Okay, and it's like, you'll encounter logical people who are decent and kind and whatever from all across the spectrum, no matter what they believe in, and you'll also encounter nuts people who are just crazy off their freaking rocking chair. I'm not kidding. Okay, people are really diverse, which is why it's so hard to generalize. Which is why it's almost a waste of time to try and do it. You know, religious people think this way. It's like, do you know all religious people? No, I don't. Then how can you claim to know how they all think? You know, I'm a believer in the individual. If somebody is individually a douchebag, it has never mind as to what organizations they belong to. There are some organizations, probably, I can't really name any off the top of my head, that are populated with 100% douchebaggery beyond all. Even the White House cabinet is not 100% douchebaggery. I mean, take Catherine Austin Fitz, for instance, White House worker and what have you, top job, And she comes out and exposes copious quantities of scumbaggery that's going on. So proves the point. There's good people even in bad organizations. Just like there's logical people, even in organizations that are basically propagated by illogical organizations. There's still logical people inside there, okay? Now, this isn't called contradiction. This is called complexity, okay? Humans are very complex organisms. Just because somebody does one thing and they do something else that appears to contradict it doesn't mean they're a hypocrite. It means that they're a complicated individual. Okay, everybody has reasons for what they do. Some of them may not be terribly, shall we say, justified. Some of them can be. But the point of fact is you cannot generalize. I'm starting to recognize this more and more, is that it's so difficult to do accurately that essentially it's almost not worth the effort. Okay, the only time where you do generalizations is when you're talking with other people who know that the generalization isn't true, but they're just going along with it anyway, just for the sake of argument. And that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because you know for a fact that this group doesn't exist, and yet you talk about them like they're a group. Hold on a second. What do you mean, Vinny? What do you mean a group doesn't exist? Well, does a forest exist? Well, yeah, of course. You know, you can see a forest, you can fly over them or run over. Really? Can you touch a forest? No, I can't. Well, what? Do you know why that is? No, it's because the forest is an abstraction. The forest is the idea that has come about because there's more than one or two or three trees. There's lots of them. Okay, so you call lots and lots of trees of forests, just like you call lots and lots of people a group. The group technically doesn't exist. The forest technically doesn't exist because you can't touch a group, just like you can't touch a forest. There are only those individual trees and there are only those individual people. They're the only thing that matters. That is the most important thing in the world, as far as I'm concerned. Looking at people as a person, not as people, but as a person, because a person is unique, a person has their own history, a person has all these intricate details throughout their lives. A group of people, on the other hand, you just don't know, because there's too much to figure out. The elite individuals, and people always call them the elite or the New World Order, and some people who are new to the movement may, and I think I've actually made this point myself when I was a little bit less clued up than I am now. Who are these people specifically? Name names. Who are these individuals that are responsible for the perpetuity of scumbaggery that we currently seem to be living in? And it's actually not that difficult to find them. Have a look at the most billionaire-ish type scumbags ever. Okay, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, DuPonts, JP Morgans, what's his name? Microsoft Bill Gates mofo. Okay, those are the elite. They're the eugenicists. They're the people who promote vaccines and killing everybody. Okay, and this isn't generalizing. This is 100% fact based upon a comprehensive study of each of these individuals, their past and what they do and what they have said that they're going to do, what they said that they want. David Rockefeller has thanked the Washington Times or whatever, a bunch of mainstream newspapers for keeping their plan for the world secret, because they would not be able to develop a world government if the public knew about it. We have a caller here, area code 4519. Welcome to the show, man. What's your first name?
My name is Tracy. How you doing, Vinny?
Hey, Tracy. Calling in from Canada, I suppose.
I am calling in from the Great White North. We're actually snowing, which is odd because we haven't had snow all winter. I would like to thank HAARP and the powers that be for the bit of winter we are now having in April.
You know what's funny, Tracy, is that didn't snow in Canada during the winter, as you just said, and the sun didn't shine over summer in New Zealand. But now that it's getting into autumn and winterish in New Zealand, the sun's come out. And now that it's starting to become summer in Canada and spring and what have you, the the snow comes out. What the hell is going on here?
I don't know. Okay, I'm a little bit joking about the harp thing, but we have to admit there's a bit of oddness, weather wise, all over the planet. It's snowing and there's blizzards in England. There's tornadoes, and then the next week, snow in America. Up here, we're getting, it's trying to snow, it's not staying, but it's at least trying, and we've had no snow in Ontario this year.
That is odd. Maybe the, is Ontario on the west coast by chance?
We are pretty much central eastern.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we should be
fuzzy.
Pardon?
Maybe my geography was a bit fuzzy on that one, but I don't. What is it up with the weather? I think, for example, weather kind of changes all the time, right? It never stays the same, but sometimes it just behaves really, really strangely. Not violently or whatever, because that's part of the normality. But I think it's like, at least within the last year or so, I've been looking behind me and looking around me, and it's just like, there's something really wrong. I don't know what it is.
Maybe you should whisper it, because I found this little thing today, Vinny, from NASA. And the scientists are saying it really quietly. It wasn't in mainstream news, but you can look it up, everyone. Saying there's basically a methane leak in the Arctic, not caused by us. So they're admitting a greenhouse gas, which they found in ice samples before, and caused a global event that might have wiped most of us out. It's happening again. And guess what? We didn't do it by our SUVs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they are now admitting, and they actually have a little site called Gamma Ray Intro of something else coming from the center of the universe, basically, hitting us with gamma rays. I'm hoping we're going to turn into the Hulk, because I'm ready for the Avengers.
I think this is a real positive way to think about it. I mean, because after all, a lot of people don't like me when I'm angry. It would be nice if I could turn into some huge rage monster too.
Sure. That would be a hero. And what is this thing? And maybe it's just me, Vinny, but I want to ask you about it. It was a whole thing when I heard this whole talk that I'm wondering if you're hearing this too, that people are just looking for a hero. And if you do not answer their questions promptly and exactly, oh, you're the bad guy now.
Yeah.
Is it just me or people losing their frickin' minds, like you mentioned earlier?
Hey, well, in my experience, Tracy, when people go through really, really hard times, sometimes it's difficult to keep control of your mind and your thoughts and all of this kind of stuff, particularly if you don't have a good diet or get much exercise. In fact, those are the two things that you need in order to be able to become crazy in the first place. I have never seen any crazy people who are real buff and work out all the time. I've seen real douchebags who are like that, who are basically kind of like they're crazy, but they're not actually crazy. They're just douchebags.
I don't know, Vinny. When a man has to work out to the point he looks like a uterus when he flexes, I'm a little concerned.
Well, yeah. I suppose, you know, I'm not talking about that kind of like I'm not talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilder type healthy people. I mean, that's just insane in and of itself.
You know,
like the spectrum.
That's a new hobby.
You're like, you need to be this fit and this healthy to be sane. if you're really, really, really unhealthy and really, really, really unfit, your brain will eventually deteriorate and you'll lose your grip on your reality. If you go way too far over the line, on the other hand, and you have biceps on your eyelids, and you have if you have thoracic triceps on your gluteus maximus, then you can't be that balanced.
Yes, someone looks at you and says, "Are you blinking?" You say, "No, I'm working out." That's probably an issue.
Yeah. I mean, I can just see it now. Some guy curling a 15 kilo dumbbell with his left eyelash. Arr! Hulk workouts with eyelash.
We are getting incoming gamma rays. It could happen to all of us. The sun is freaking out. That's not the technical term, of course, but basically. We are getting energy from everywhere.
There was a massive solar flare come off the sun just the other day or something. And usually when there's massive solar flares, allegedly there's earthquake activity associated with it. I think it's something like when the solar rays flash over the Earth, you know how we get the aurora borealis and all of that kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
What happens is that the heat from those rays actually gets picked up by the magma underneath the Earth's surface, and it can even affect the tectonic plates and trigger earthquakes. Or something along those lines, but I'm wondering, Tracy, you know, whether or not there is such a thing as the Earth being calm and livable, or is it just a constant change all the time, and you're just lucky that you didn't get hit by this week's tsunami or that month's earthquake, or you didn't get. Or you're happy enough to be living in a generation that doesn't get cooked up by solar radiation. You know, I'm not sure. But the ultimate thing that I think we should all actually realistically be concerned about and taking steps towards is Fukushima. Okay, we've got an article here on gorillamedia.co.nz, Tracy. What was it? Fukushima is a possible life extinction event. And I hold that to be basically a pretty evident truth. You have a look at the amount of radiation that's come off it, how it's come through now all of the Pacific Ocean, essentially, and it won't go away for another 40,000 years. You know, it's just pretty much this is what we need to be worried about. The only thing that we really need to be worried about, as far as I'm concerned. Now, because what's more worrisome than becoming sterile and the human race no longer existing? I don't think I can worry about anything as much. It's just that simple. And it was a similar event, disaster, the oil volcano explosion in the Gulf of Mexico a few years back that made me sit bolt right up out of bed in the morning and just said, right, time to stop messing around. And that's when I started doing this radio show and all of this stuff really, really full time. Like I took a quantum leap up. It's because when there's something very, very dangerous and serious out there, boy, is that a great motivator. You'd be surprised what you can accomplish. Thank you, Tracy, for your call. And ladies and gentlemen, final segment coming up. The number to call is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And you can also join us in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. Back in a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
We go brush our teeth. That's all part of it. That's foreplay. You go sort
Welcome
out the
back
recycling.
To 62 Hours and Talk Radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
We're in the bed.
Broadcasting live. You're fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. Island chain nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Fukushima irradiated coastline. Where everybody's got a job as an incandescent light bulb. Listen, from Natural News. I want to give big ups to my mate Jeff. I'm not sure if he's living in Christchurch or Wellington or Auckland now since the Christchurch quake. But Jeff, anyway, here's for you, man. Conventional milk supply in Australia deliberately tainted with unlabeled waste product known as permeate. Isn't that nice? Australians who purchase conventional milk products from their local grocery store or supermarket may be drinking a processed food product composed of more than 16% industrial waste every time they gulp down a glass. The Age reports that permeate, a waste byproduct of processed milk and cheese production, is quietly being added into many conventional milk brands in order to cut costs. And the public is largely unaware of this due to lax rules that do not require proper labeling. And also, most people don't read the labels anyway. When whole milk is passed through a special processing sieve that separates proteins from fat in order to produce other dairy-based products, it creates permeate, also known as modified whey, which is composed of lactose and other minerals. Permeate is also the byproduct of cheese production, as well as production of whey protein concentrates and isolates. You know, those dudes who try to bulk up and protein powder, that kind of stuff. And when it is labeled as an ingredient, permeate often goes by the name dairy product solids. Now, though promoters of permeate say it's high in vitamins and nutrients, the watery, greenish substance is not technically milk. Dairy producers actually view permeate as a problematic waste stream that is difficult to dispose of, to quote a report issued by dairy giant Dairymark, which is now trying to revamp the reputation of permeate from an undesirable sludge into a rich source of dairy carbohydrate. Now, I don't know about you, but almost every single time I see somebody coming up with some greatly huge, disgusting bunch of chemicals, they tell everybody two things. Number one, it's not that bad. And number two, eat it and drink it. It'll be good for you. Fluoride, for instance, made from a chemical slurry. And it's like some of the worst, most horrific chemicals known to man. You know, it has to be shipped by a hazmat truck. And yet, drink it, it's good for your teeth. It'll eat away a factory's chimneys unless they're washed down constantly every second with water, but it'll be good for your body, right? Now, permeate is being secretly added to conventional milk supplies in Australia because it is cheaper than real milk, and thus can effectively water it down without raising too many red flags in the consumer noticeability department. This adulteration, of course, helps increase the financial bottom line for dairy producers as they can reduce the cost of producing milk and also dispose of an inconvenient waste product in the process. But an even bigger problem with permeate is that Australian law does not even require it to be labelled, which leaves consumers in the dark about which milk brands contain it and which do not. So while milk producers are increasing their margins, Australian consumers are being deceived much in the same way that American consumers are with unlabeled milk that contains genetically modified recombinant bovine growth hormone, or RBGH. According to The Age, National Foods, Australia's largest milk supplier, now adds up to 16.43% permeate in its milk brands. These brands include Pura, Big M, Dairy Farmers, Woolworths,
And Coles, Woolworths basically, is like a supermarket chain that almost has complete dominance over Australia. Meanwhile, an investigation conducted by Australia's A Current Affair found that Parmalat, Pure Organic, Pura Gold, Country Valley, Norco and A2 are all brands that do not contain permeate. All right, so I'll just read those ones out again just for the Aussie listeners. Parmalat, Pure Organic, Pura Gold, Country Valley, Norco and A2 are those milk brands that you can safely drink without industrial waste contamination. Speaking of waste and contamination, blogger defiant at MP defamation claim. This is in the New Zealand news this morning. Two right-wing bloggers who allegedly published defamatory comments about Labour earthquake recovery spokeswoman Leanne Dalziel may face legal action. That's right. In this country, if you criticise a politician, you can face legal action. Defamation, baby. The comments were made after Dalziel told the press about a, quote, tragic situation where two Asian restaurants in Colombo Street, Christchurch, were forced to close due to quake damage. David Farah, who we've had on the show before, his Kiwi blog, published a reader's email questioning the motives behind Dalziel's involvement. Now, to just question motives is enough for somebody to call their lawyer and get you on a defamation case. Isn't that lovely? And Cameron Whale Oil Slater, who I've invited on the show and he never bloody responded to me, the douchebag, posted the same comments online. The same comments. Both bloggers received a letter last week from Duncan Webb, Dalziel's lawyer, threatening legal action unless the comments were removed. The Whale Oil blog republishes portions of an email allegedly sent to Mr. Farah and is inaccurate and defamatory. It contains numerous inaccuracies which are injurious to the reputation of Ms. Dalziel. She's already a politician. How much worse could your reputation possibly get? No further action would be taken if the bloggers removed the comments, published retractions, and apologized. Farah obeyed the request, but Slater refused to remove the comments or apologize. Yeah. That sounds like Cameron Slater. He did not care if it turned into a legal war because he's already, published. What was it? We have name suppression in this country sometimes. You know, if somebody famous or what have you goes to court and they don't want their name revealed or whatever, and the court orders you not to reveal their name, Cameron Slater did anyway. And he wound up losing that battle in court. And I'm not sure if you had to pay fines or went to jail or something like that. But, yeah, it was a big hubbub here back in the day. And so this is just more of the same from him. Now, she needs to, this is what he said, she needs to concentrate on what's important for her constituents in Christchurch rather than trying to sue an Auckland blogger, he said. The MP declined to comment and her lawyer would not say whether further legal action would be taken against Slater. Now the mere fact that you can threaten a blogger just for publishing an email, this is fracking hardcore tyranny. And, of course, it's not the hardcore right-wingers in the National Party that are doing it. It's the Labour Party, the opposition, who's supposed to be out for the workers and out for freedom of speech at this particular point, who criticise the government and doing terrible things like selling state assets and what have you. They're the same bunch of Twizzler, turkey, sumsuckery, egg-sucking scumbaggery, okay? I cannot, under any circumstances, believe that Parliament has nothing on its hands, okay? It's always got dirt on its hands or blood on its hands or it's got its dick in its hands or something. Something's going on at all times. They're either a useful idiot working for the government who suffers from somewhat a bit of douchebaggery, okay, and want to make themselves all big and fabulous and, oh, yes, we rule everything. And I'm really nice. Yeah. They're either that kind of person or they're the mama boy, suck-up, brown-nosing douchebag who essentially has everybody else in a category of worthlessness. You know, everybody else is worthless. I'm the only one who matters. Like a sociopath. Okay, so those are the two types of politicians, just in general, that you have to deal with, douchebags and sociopaths. One of them will lie to you, know that they're lying to you, and keep doing it anyway, and the other one will lie to you, not know that they're lying to you, and refuse to look any evidence that proves them wrong, and then keep lying to you anyway. So the end result is the same. And they all use the state or lawyers or some kind of intimidation, mechanism to prevent people from criticizing them. Because if everybody's capable of openly criticizing the government in every single decision that they make, they'd never be able to get anything done. And in my opinion, that wouldn't be such a bad thing if the government couldn't get anything done, because every time they do get stuff done, it makes the country worse. And I don't want to put up with that kind of stuff anymore, man. I mean, I love my country. I love my people. I love this world. I love this. I love all the people in it. Apart from, you know, obviously douchebags and those who engage in scumbaggery. But the fact of the matter is, we can't be tolerant of that kind of bait. We shouldn't be. Principally because of the slippery slope that it puts us upon. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in today, and I hope you will be listening in tomorrow. It'll be Anzac Day in New Zealand. Last Anzac Day, I got pretty fired up about the our troops dying and all of that kind of stuff after serving international bankers and getting flown overseas to die so that the British could sit there having cups of tea instead. It's a sad day and a day of remembrance, but sadly, people don't actually remember why they went there, how they died, or anything that really matters. It's the patriots always wound up going and dying for somebody else's empire's needs, and they don't wind up staying home and making their own country better, do they? We'll see you again sometime, folks.